Hey, good morning. Wow, hey, how's it going? Hey, today's what we call a family Sunday, which means we encourage our kindergarten through fifth grade friends to join us. We encourage them by not having programming over there today. That's strong encouragement. But here's why we do that. One, it's a lot more fun having them in the room. There's a certain energy and things that happen. It's so much exciting and stuff like that. We like them being around us. We like us being around them. Really what it's called is intergenerational worship. There's something that changes a church, a community, and really an individual with intergenerational worship, when you worship of people that aren't all the same age as you. And so we like to do that every now and then. And when we do these Sundays, we try to make, or I as a teacher, whoever's teaching, tries to do the message with them involved. And so there's things, but it's really, the message is targeted to everybody. I think there's something for all of us, but we try to do it a little bit differently because there are kids in the room. In fact, I will need 13 volunteers later in the service from kids. So if that's you, start getting up your courage and mustering it up. And I'll only need 13, but I'll need 13. And if we don't have enough kids to be the 13, I'll start moving the age up. So anyway, there you go. Well, today what I want to talk about is something that happened in the life of Jesus, in the life of a bunch of people, that was it's a familiar story. But I think sometimes we miss the point of the story. And before we do that, actually, if you have your Bibles, you can turn to Matthew 14. But anytime you read a passage like we're about to read, it's called a narrative. It's a story. But it's not a story like once upon a time. It's a story of something that really happened. In this story of a day in the life of Jesus, a lot of things happened, and actually a lot of people were involved. And this story is about Jesus. There's four different books of the Bible that are called the Gospels that tell the story of Jesus: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And they're called the Gospels. The Gospel means good news. And they're unique perspective tellings on the life of Jesus. There's a lot that's similar between them, but there's some things that are a little bit different in terms of their perspective. At least two of the gospel writers were actual followers, part of the 12 disciples that followed Jesus. Another one was a follower of Jesus who was a historian and a doctor that wanted to really get the story right. And then another one is, we're not exactly sure what he was. We think he might have been actually Peter, one of the disciples, his cousin. But he was a very close follower of Jesus in the early days of the church. And they all write these gospels. And Matthew, we're going to look at today, Matthew 14, was one of those 12 disciples. And as we talk about the story, I want to give you a tool that could help you. And we know what a tool is, right? Like if you need to unscrew something, you need a screwdriver. If you want to drive a nail into the ground, you need a hammer. Yeah, so tools do different things. Well, this is a tool that if you were reading the Bible, you could actually use. You wouldn't use a hammer, you wouldn't use a saw, but you would use this. And you wouldn't use this tool on every part of the Bible. But if you were reading the Bible and it was like this in the Gospels, a story about the life of Jesus, here's how you know if it counts. Is something happening? Is somebody telling a story where something's happening? And here's the tool. You dig in your Bible study toolbox and pull this out when you're reading a story like this, is put yourself in the story. What would it be like if you were there, standing on the side, just watching it happen, in the crowd, actually one of the people involved in the story? And as we read this today, I want you to try and put yourself into the story. Use your imagination, not to make up something that's true or not true. Like the Bible, it is what it is. It says what it says, and it doesn't say what it doesn't say. Like the truth is there, but what are you thinking, feeling, and doing when this is happening around you? There's something that can be very insightful about that. So the next time you read a story in the Bible, especially something that's happening, especially if Jesus is involved, put yourself as if you're part of the story and ask yourself what impact it has on you. Well, let's read this story now and try that. In Matthew 14, here's what happened. When Jesus, so he's there, so picture Jesus is there, he heard what had happened, so he hears something, and he heard what happened, and because of that, he wanted to withdraw by boat privately to a solitary place. Does anyone know what solitary means? Quiet, by itself, away. He needed to get away. Something happened. Well, what happened? Well, if anytime you don't know what it's talking about, it says, when he heard that, you don't know what that is, back up. Right before that, someone very close to Jesus died. Somebody killed him. And they killed him because he was with Jesus. They didn't like that. And Jesus was sad that somebody who's following him and was someone who believed in him. As a matter of fact, this guy's name is John the Baptist. And he was the first guy that pointed at Jesus and said, "That's who we've been waiting for. This is the Son of God who's come to take away the sins of the world." And John was the one who was pointing to Jesus. And everyone was crowding around to see John. And John said, "You're not here to see me. You guys need to focus on Jesus." And then John is put to death. So Jesus was sad. This was someone who was faithful to do what God asked him to do. And he was Jesus' cousin. This is family. This is a faithful servant. This is someone who died in a cruel way because he believed in Jesus. And maybe you've had something like this that happens. Have you ever had such a hard day or something that happens to you that you think, I'm peopled out today. I need to get away from people. I need to go just kind of get a grip, get a hold of myself. I need to deal with kind of this sadness or whatever it is. Well, that's what Jesus wanted to do. We just did this series called Quiet, how God designed us with this need to, on a regular basis, be quiet. Just let things settle down, to connect with God, to connect with others. Like, we need to just, and Jesus wanted to do that. He modeled that for us. But there was a problem. Jesus drew a crowd wherever he went. As a matter of fact, I think a lot of people don't really understand this about Jesus. When Jesus would walk in the room would fill up. It was crowded. People wanted to be near him. They were fascinated by him. Some people were threatened by him. But everybody was interested in. So many people would say, wherever he is, I'm going to be there. So here's what they did. Hearing that he went away by himself to a quiet place, they said, "Well, I'll put an end to that." The crowds followed him on foot. So he's going by boat, and they're kind of following around the lake from the towns. And when Jesus landed and saw such a large crowd, he doesn't kind of roll his eyes and shoo them away. He has compassion on them. He cared for them. And he starts healing their sick. He starts engaging with them. And all day long, all these people are crowded around, and he's drawing a crowd, and there's huge crowd is around Jesus. As a matter of fact, we find out later in this story that it was about 5,000 men plus women plus children. Just for a point of reference, anyone ever been to the United Spirit Arena? Okay, it's a good year to go there. If you've ever been there and it's been filled up, that's about the size of the crowd it could have been. 5,000 men plus women and children. It was a big crowd, okay? Verse 15, as evening approached, so it's suddenly getting dark, the disciples, how many disciples were there? 12, came to him and said, "This is a remote place. Chick-fil-A is closed because it's Sunday, and pizza does not deliver this far out." I'm just adding that in. There's no food. "And it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the village and buy themselves some food." So Jesus hears what they're saying, but what he sees is that they see 5,000 plus problems, rather than seeing 5,000 plus people. These weren't problems, these were people. And they were here for something more than just food, but there's a logistical issue. They are getting hungry. So Jesus decides to do something about it. This is a very familiar story. How many of you have ever heard the story of Jesus feeding the 5,000 before? Raise your hand. A lot of us have. If you haven't, I'll tell it to you. But this is not a story about catering. This is not solving a catering emergency of how do we feed these people when Chick-fil-A is closed? Like, that's not the problem they're trying to solve. Jesus sees an opportunity here to do something that builds a big faith in people's lives. So Jesus replies to them, to the disciples. How many disciples were there? 12. "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." So imagine if you had to feed 5,000, 10,000 people, but you didn't have any food and you didn't have any money. That's how they felt. They're like, "What can we do?" And Jesus is not saying, "I can't solve the problem. You solve the problem." And again, this isn't a problem he's trying to solve. This is an opportunity he wants to leverage to do something in the life of his disciples. Because for 3 years, he put them in situations where they were in over their head. They didn't see how it could be done. They weren't sure what to do, but they had faith and they trusted, or they didn't. But by the end of it, they knew who Jesus was and their faith in God grew bigger. And that's what Jesus is trying to do here. But he wasn't just trying to avoid solving the problem in this moment. He wants to put them in a position where they have to have faith. It says that the disciples replied back, "We have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Well, one of the other disciples, John, in his gospel, the gospel of John, gives us a little more insight into how it went down. John 6, Philip answered them. That was one of the 12 disciples. 8 months' wages would not be enough to buy bread for each one to have a bite. Jesus, you know how much we make for a living. But you know, even if we were in a good paying job and we kept our paychecks for 8 months, all we could do is have a Costco sampler platter with a toothpick and a piece of bread and maybe give everyone one, but it wouldn't even go that far. Like, we can't do this. We can't give them something to eat. And then Andrew, another of his disciples, Andrew's this really interesting guy. We don't know about him a lot as a disciple. Some disciples we know a lot about. Some, we just see their name. You see a little bit more about Andrew, but the interesting thing is every time you see this guy, Andrew, he's doing something. He's usually bringing somebody and connecting them to Jesus. He does it here because he finds this boy who's got a sack lunch. He says, well, maybe this will help. He did it early on when he figured out who Jesus was. He brought his brother Simon Peter, who was one of the main disciples for Jesus. He introduces him to Jesus. At the Last Supper, there's a bunch of people crowded in town, and the disciples are having a little private venue event going on. They're having the Last Supper. They don't know how big a deal it is. They think it's just another Passover meal, but it's about to be the last meal Jesus would share with them. But anyway, they're trying to kind of be by themselves, and it says these God-fearing Greeks, these people who were not Jewish, but they loved God, wanted to meet Jesus. So Andrew says, here, let me get you past the velvet rope and let you meet him. Andrew's always bringing people to Jesus. And it just has this great lesson from his life is this. One of the best ways you could serve others is simply to introduce them to Jesus. To do what Andrew did. When someone comes to you, connect them to Jesus. That's what Andrew did, and he did it really well. And here he connects this kid, a young boy, with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish. But he asked, but how far will that go? But he didn't turn the kid away. He still at least brought the lunch. And in my mind, as I try and picture myself in the story, I picture myself as one of the disciples, maybe Andrew, maybe I got a lot of Philip in me, you know, kind of like, ah, we'll never make it. I kind of have that kind of idea sometimes. I picture myself as the kid, what it would be like to be in his shoes. And I'm imagining, because he says, here is a boy. He didn't just bring the lunch, he brought the kid. So I picture the kid holding his lunch, and this one kid has a lunchbox. This is my lunchbox. And he comes up with this lunchbox, and he says, here's this kid. Now, the thing about 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish, if you've ever seen this drawn out, sometimes they draw the loaves of bread like big French baguettes, like big, long loaves of bread. They weren't. They were these little cakes of bread and these salted, dried-out fish. This was the typical meal that somebody would eat if they didn't have a lot. This was not a wealthy kid's meal. This was a kid who didn't have a lot. But apparently somebody, whether it's him or his mom or his dad, somebody packed him a lunch, and they bring it. When I hear this story, was there really only one kid that brought a lunch that day? Was there only one mom who thought, oh, you're going out? Here, take a lunch with you. Like, was there really only one person that had food there? There could have been more. But I think Jesus stopped when he had the one kid. He goes, that's enough. I can work with this. Because I think he wanted to do something not just in the lives of the crowd of the people or his disciples. I think he wanted to do something in the life of this boy. Jesus did something that was very different. Kids were not valued in that culture. They weren't. For a kid to be one of the stars of the story, that didn't happen at that time. But you saw how Jesus interacted with kids, and he valued them. He let them come up and listen around and why he taught, and he prayed for them, and he blessed them. And Jesus was always inviting the least likely people to be in a story, to be part of the story. And I think, here's this kid. I think there were others that had a meal there. I can't prove that. It says what it says. It doesn't say what it doesn't say. But what it says is there was a boy. And I think this serves as a valuable lesson. You see it here, you see it elsewhere in Scripture, that it does not matter your age. You are never too young to be used by God. You are never too, and if you're filling in blanks, young to be used by God. Is that one of the blanks? Yes. Important fact number one. You are never too, and the blank there is young. However, there's a lot of things you could put there. You're never too old to be used by God. You are never too introverted to be used by God. You're never too far gone to be used by God. You are never too anything to be used by God. God can use anyone and anything for his good purposes. And the great news is he wants to use you. And that day, he wanted to use him. You are never too young to be used by God. And here's this kid that comes with just his lunch. And God says, I can work with that. And in Matthew 14, 18, he says this, bring them here to me. Bring me the fish, bring me the loaves. You will never know what God can do with what you have until you bring it to him. Every one of you has something. And God can use it. He can use it to do more than you think and impact more than you can imagine. And he can use it to do something in your life that builds a big faith. But all this kid was has this lunch and Jesus said, bring it here to me. And the good thing is, they did. And by the way, that's important fact number two. You will never know what God can do with what you have until you bring it to him. Goes on to say this. He directed the people to sit down on the grass. Taking the five loaves and the two fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. That's an important note. He doesn't just say, Jesus isn't the one that gives it to him. He gives it to the disciples and says, here. And he puts a little bit in each basket. He says, hey, you'd go over there, and you take, you know, section 240, and you section 291, and you do the lower bowl. Like, he, like, sends them around the whatever the venue was where they were sitting, and he says, you take this around and feed them. And he puts one in the hands of the disciples, and they head out. And here's the key verse, if you're on the kids' note-taking page, Matthew 14, 20. After they passed it out, they all ate and were satisfied. They both ate, everyone ate, and they were satisfied. And to be honest, the meal's not that satisfying to begin with. So I think they turned into Chick-fil-A nuggets. That's just my take on it. I can't say that it's in there, but he did something in the meantime where it turned into, you know, cheese rolls or turned it into pizza, or he did something with it that made it just like, whatever it was, they were satisfied. It's hard to feed anyone and have them be satisfied, let alone 5,000 to 10,000 people. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, and again, besides women and children. Again, you will never know what God can do with what you have until you bring it to him. So the question you have to ask is, what do I have? What's God given me that may seem like a, man, I got a lunch and I'm not even that excited about it for that kid. He had no idea how his lunch would go down that day. Hey, are there 12, I need 13 volunteers from kids. Okay, go ahead and come on up. Go ahead, Zachary. Yeah, John, come on. Yeah, sure. How many do I have? Hey, would you keep count as kids come up? So 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, go ahead. Let me go over here. Yeah, I'll go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Someone count. Math is hard for me to begin with. Okay. No one else come up right now, but let's see how many we have. 14? All right. Two extra, so we have 12 plus two more. Okay, everyone take a step back. And you guys scoot over here. Actually, you come over here. Come over here, and you come over here. And you guys scoot down that way. How many do we have? 15. This is going to be a creative retelling of the story of Jesus. Okay. Everyone scoot this way some. Scoot this way some. Keep scooting. Keep sliding. Slide to the right or left. Slide to the left. All right. Okay. I'm not going to do this. Okay. Here's what we're going to do. Yeah. Hey, you stand right over here and you stand all the way further over here. Okay. And I want you to hold this for me. Okay. Hold that. You're Jesus. Okay. Now, let me be clear. You are not Jesus, but in this story, you're playing the role of Jesus, okay? Don't let that go to your head. You are the kid with the lunchbox, okay? Stand right over here. Man, you are confident in your role, right? You got it. All right. You're disciple 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. You're the 12 disciples. You come over here, and you come over here. You're the crowd of 5,000 men plus women and children. Get as big as possible. Like, you're the crowd. You got to be the crowd, okay? That's about as creative as I can get. I'm so,
oh,
okay.
They're the crowd, actually.
Well, they are, but I like your hat, by the way. But since they're on stage, I'm kind of in an awkward place where I got to work with them. But how about they're representing the crowd, but those are the extras in the background. Is that a good plan?
Sure.
Sure. She's tolerating me. Okay. So, hang on. I'll be right back. I had to improvise. All right, so Jesus says, bring it here to me. Open the lunchbox. And put it in there. Okay, very good. Okay, now, close your lunchbox. Okay, now, then the disciples each picked up a basketful. Follow me, Jesus. Isn't that weird? Jesus said, follow me, and I just follow me, Jesus. Anyway, that's weird. Thank you for laughing at that. So, each of the disciples are holding a basket full of fish and bread, which if you put it together, they're goldfish crackers. I mean, maybe that's what he had that day. What's going on down there? Hey, here. Here you go. Okay. So each of the disciples had leftover, after he had fed the crowd, so the crowd all had theirs. So you guys are the crowd watching. You're the 12 disciples. Head back over there, Jesus. Okay. How many disciples were there? How many basketfuls were left over? I think Jesus did that on purpose. It wasn't to have leftovers. It wasn't like, hey, well, food will last. Doesn't need to be refrigerated. We can just keep it, hang on to it for a few days. I don't think that was about that at all. I don't even think this was about the crowd. But do you think their faith grew after watching this happen? There were some in the back that thought, hey, they're getting baskets in the back. I didn't know this was a catered thing. This is awesome. Sure, some may not have known. We don't know anything that's going on in the mind of the crowd. We don't know what's going on in the minds of each of the 12 disciples. But each one of the 12 disciples are holding their basket, hold it out like this, and look down at it. What do you think is going on in their mind when they look down and see their basket full of food? Huh. I think this built their faith in a big way. Like, they're holding something. In the beginning, they thought, we're empty-handed. We can't feed these people. Jesus said, you give them something to eat. He's given them a chance to believe. What if Andrew had come up and said, hey, we've got enough to feed him. We've got this. But I don't get the sense that was what Andrew was saying. But every one of those disciples saw this in a big way. Their faith grew. What it doesn't tell us, 12 basketfuls. What it doesn't tell us, and I'm improvising here a bit, I'm reading something into it, I'm putting myself in the story, but when I look around the story, I see the crowd and I see the 12 disciples and I see The kid with the lunchbox. And in my, I'm just guessing here. I'm not trying to be heretical. I don't think I am. I bet that he was fed and ate and was satisfied too. And he was going to anyway. But when he opened up his lunchbox, open it up, and said, "Here, Jesus." Not only were his needs met, but the needs of the crowd were, and he participated in a miracle. I bet he never looked at his lunch the same way again. Everybody's faith was built that day. 5,000 people saw a miracle. 12 were part of it, but one was the starting point. God uses a kid and his lunchbox to do something big. And it wasn't just feed the crowd. It was build the faith of everybody involved. Okay, you guys can go. Boy, that's heavy, isn't it? Yeah. You guys can go have a seat. You can keep your goldfish crackers. Yeah, don't keep my lunchbox. You can keep the crackers, yes. And thanks for your insight. You'll be a future stage manager or director someday. Really good insights. You thought it through more than I did, actually. Here, yeah, just put that in there. There you go. So here's the deal. You've got something in your life. You've got gifts. You've got abilities. You've got time. You have talents. You have relationship. You have influence. You have a story that's going on around you. And if you would just approach life by saying, "God, what have you given me?" And again, you're never too young to be used by God. You're never too old. You're never too anything. God used people who were too anything to be used for something bigger than they could have thought, bigger than they could ask or imagine. You will never know what God can do with what you have until you bring it to him. So the question is, what do you have? The other thing is this. What you have, whatever it is, as meager as it might be, is exactly what God needs to do, what he wants to do through you. Wherever you are in your story, some of you are in a good place, some of you are in a challenging place. Whatever it is, people feel like I've got a lot, some people feel like you have nothing. Wherever you are in your story, wherever you are right now, you are perfectly positioned to be used by God for his good purposes in your life. And I think one of the reasons we miss out on being a part of God's story is we think ours is the only story being told. Ours is the only story where God's at work. But sometimes God has us in a place where I'm not sure what God's doing, and he's doing something in my life, but he's doing something in the lives of the people around me. And what you have is exactly what God needs to do, what he wants to do through you. Whatever you have, God says, "I can use that." But here's the thing. What you have for God to use you is faith. Faith is this word in the Bible that can mean belief, trust. But faith is kind of this idea that it's connected to your eyes, but not in a way where it's what you see. It's actually connected to your eyes because faith is goes beyond what you can see. Sometimes God asks you to do something and you don't see how it's going to be possible. It doesn't feel like it's possible. And that's where God says, that's where I do my best work. And if you use what God's given you, whatever it is, say, "God, here's my gifts, here's my money, here's my time, here's my influence, here's my story, here's my pain, whatever it is, God, here's my life, here's my Monday." God says, "I can work with that." And if you want to be used by God, much like the disciples at the beginning of the story, there are oftentimes you will feel in over your head. Did you hear that in the story that Brandy was telling earlier about Megan, about how she feels in over her head serving? She feels like sometimes I can't remember the exact phrase she used, but Megan Bowman talked about that. Let me tell you the thing. When you read the Bible and when I think about my life, I don't like how it feels, but being in over your head is a good place to be because that's where faith grows. Stepping out and serving others. Stepping out and giving financially and trusting God with your finances. Trusting God to try and introduce someone to Jesus in a world where it's not always popular to do that. to believe something to be true, what God's promised, that he's promised to be with you even when it doesn't feel like it, but you're going to live like he is anyway. Like there's some things that God asks you to do. And your availability to God, just being available, saying, God, use me. Your availability is much more important than any ability you have. Because God can take anything. What you have is what God's given you. But what you have, God says, I can use that. And what I believe is that God is always working to build a bigger faith in your life. If you want to know what God's plan is your life and your life is for tomorrow, I can tell you what it is. He wants to build a bigger faith. Every day, that's what he's trying to do. And it's very easy to build a life where you don't have to trust him and have faith to see beyond what's right in front of you. But God will put you in situations like he did with Philip and Andrew and all the disciples where you've got to trust him. And on the backside of it, your faith grows, but going through the middle, it's tough. But God is always working to build a bigger faith in your life. One of the ways we try to do that, we actually have these five things that we always try to do on a regular basis for anybody here because we think it'll build a bigger faith. And one of those is serving. That's why we've been talking about serving so much, not just because of this Easter series we have coming up, but because we believe serving always really matters. Our mission is to make more and stronger followers of Jesus Christ. That's why we want to open up Easter seats during this Easter series. Because we always want to think there's more, and the room gets kind of crowded sometimes. But it's not just more, it's also we want to build stronger followers of Jesus. When we're involved with introducing people to Jesus, and we get involved in serving in different ways beyond the kind of what we're comfortable with, and you step in, out over your head, and you serve, not only will it help make more and stronger followers of Jesus Christ at Live Oak, it'll help you become a stronger follower of Christ by serving. And in over your heads is a good place to be. And that day, the faith of those 12 disciples grew as they're sitting there holding that basket, looking down at the food left over, realizing what they started with. They probably looked at each other, and they looked at the food, but I guarantee you they never looked at meals the same way again. But it wasn't about thinking about feeding people. This wasn't a catering game plan for the future. This was something that actually they say in the very next story, what happens when they go out for a little boat trip. And they experience Jesus in this miraculous way. They go, who is this? Who is this? When you trust God and step out by faith, your clarity of understanding who Jesus is grows. Your faith grows bigger. And I know the 12 disciples' faith grew bigger, but I bet that one kid's faith, I bet he never looked at his lunch the same way again. I bet he never looked at life the same way again. But sometimes Jesus asks you to do something that's really tough. One day Jesus was asking his disciples to do something really hard. He asked you to do the same thing. They asked him the question, like, how many times should we forgive somebody? And he said, a lot. It's not exactly what he said, but he said a lot. And it's more, always more than you've done. You forgive and you keep on forgiving. And I bet the disciples thought of people in their life that's hard to forgive. I bet they thought about what a brother or sister has done to them. I think they thought about what parents did. I think they thought about what friends did, people that weren't friends they did. I bet they thought about that. And their immediate response when Jesus said, I always want you to be kind, compassionate, and forgiving one another. Their response was this. Luke 17, Lord, increase our faith. It takes faith to trust that God's way is best. And what we need to be praying for and asking for is, God, would you increase my faith? Would you grow my faith? But when he answers that prayer, he'll put you in a place where it feels like you have to feed 5,000 and all you have is a Happy Meal. You feel like what God's asking me to do is I don't have enough. He is enough. And he will use that moment to do big things. And I really want to thank some of you by stepping out in faith as we as a church kind of step out in faith. And this is kind of our God increase our faith kind of moment as we do this Easter series coming up. And we asked you guys to let us know which service are you planning attending, 8:30, 10, or 11:30 for those 4 weeks. And also, would you be willing to serve in kids ministry during that 4 weeks? Kids ministry takes a lot of volunteers. Well, this is how many of you have filled out cards. I think that's a lot. I know it's a lot. And today, more than 20 people shadowed in kids ministry as potential new volunteers, saying, show me what's involved. I'd like to see if this might be a fit for me. 30 people have been emailed, but they haven't replied yet. Either it's in their spam folder, or they got busy, they changed their mind, or they don't know it's there. So I would say, please go check your email. If you filled out one of these, if we haven't gotten in touch with you, we sent an email, and if it didn't connect with you, then connect with us. Because there's 30 plus people that haven't responded yet, but actually there's 30 more spots left over that 4 weeks somewhere that we need someone to serve. Like, we're really close to getting to a point where, like, I think we can do this. I think this is Live Oak's next step, is to do this for 4 weeks and see what we can learn. But what we want to learn about is not just seating capacity and serving capacity and things like that, giving capacity. What we want to learn is, like, what is God's plan for Live Oak? And how do we best leverage what we have to reach as many as possible to make more and stronger followers of Jesus Christ? So I just want to thank you for that signed up to serve, to show interest in serving. If you have not filled out a card like this to tell us what service you might attend, please do that today. They're in the seat back pockets in front of you, or those in the front row, which, by the way, thank you for sitting in the front row. I think I scare people in the first service. There's the cards underneath. If you would just circle which service you're most likely to attend for those 3 weeks on the back of the card, which one, just circle that. And if you might be willing to serve in kids ministry during our Easter series one or more times, if you're already serving, don't tell us. We know that. But if it's a new serve or it's a different kind of serve, fill it out. Give us your name and email address. But what I want to say is thank you for doing this. You guys have done this the last couple of weeks. So we have a ton of information. We have a ton of leads. We have enough things where I think we might be able to do this. And that's really the wrong way to say it. I think God is able to do this through us if we'll trust him with our lunchbox and say, I don't have a lot, but I can do this. And for some of you stepping out to serve, if it feels like you're in over your head, that's a good place to be. That's true with serving, it's true with life. If you're in over your heads, God does some of his best work there. It's one of the best, worst places you could ever be. It's terrifying. But he does big things with just a little bit. Let's stand for closing prayer. God, thanks that there was a kid that brought his lunch that day. I'm sure there were other people that brought their lunch, but you said, one happy meal is enough. One kid-sized meal is enough. I can work with this. God, thanks for the example of disciples and people in the Bible that are just least likely people to be used by you, and then you use them for big things, because it tells us that God uses the least of these, the least likely people to be used. God, thanks that we're never too old, we're never too young, we're never too far gone, we're never too introverted, we're never too anything to be used by you. But what you care about is someone who's willing to bring you what they have. So God, help us, give us insight and wisdom to understand what have you given us, and help us to put it in your hands and trust you. And for the things you ask us to do in loving people, forgiving people, being kind to people, serving people, reaching people with the good news of Jesus, whatever it is, when it feels too hard, Lord, I pray that we wouldn't reply by telling you why we can't. Instead, we would ask, saying, God, please increase our faith. God, I pray this week our faith would grow as we trust you. It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Hey, if you filled out a card, drop it in one of the baskets as you leave today, or in the offering station or online. Thank you.